Before people were bearing their souls on Facebook and Instagram, creative folks with something to say poured their efforts into making their own magazines. Today, some people are still crafting these unique publications, although their heyday was definitely pre-internet. They're called zines.
The way I describe zines are that they are small, handmade magazines that are made out of passion and they're not made for profit. They are very idiosyncratic, individual publications that really reflect the passions and opinions of particular individuals.
Abby Bass is standing next to boxes full of zines. This is the Seattle Public Library's Zine Archive and Publishing Project, or ZAP. Abby worked with this collection once before as a volunteer when it was based at Richard Hugo House on Capitol Hill. Today, Abby's one of the librarians working to catalog the more than 30,000 zines from all over the country. And before we jump into this story, I just want to let you know that toward the end, one of the examples does contain some sexual content. So back to Abby. For her, working on this collection is personal.
I actually started making zines when I was 13 years old. I went to summer camp in North Carolina, and the art director at that camp was the editor for a local zine that he published. And in fact, I think those zines are in this collection. I think the easiest way to understand what a zine is to pick one up and look through it.
Let's do that.
Okay. Well, I've got some in the back here if you want to take a look at them. This collection began in 1996 by a couple folks who made zines, Chuck Swaim, Gary Greaves, and Annie Fanning. And they were really interested in preserving what is a pretty ephemeral kind of publication. They're much harder to track down than an average periodical.
Yeah, these aren't typically something you're going to find in the magazine section of a chain bookstore or on however the other ways people used to buy magazines, like those Publishers Clearinghouse things that come in the mail. These are all pretty much self-published?
Yes. A lot of them are just cut and paste, Xerox at the local Kinko's or copy shop, and just handed out to people. So we're actually hearing authentic voices. We're hearing from them directly about their lives and about how they see the world. In the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of punk fanzines and music fanzines that really documented the underground music scene. And in fact, this right here is Subterranean Pop, which is the zine that Bruce Pavitt did when he was an undergraduate at Evergreen College in Olympia.
And obviously the name Sub Pop, did it come from this?
Yes, it does come from the zine. He was really trying to spread the word about what he thought was a very vibrant music scene that folks should know about. So he kind of spells out his manifesto here. As our teen bongo space age counterculture becomes infiltrated by wimboid TV mop tops and skinny ties and leather pants, it becomes apparent that the bland sameness of the pop superstructure is with us once again. Once adventurous bands who now opt for major label contracts are immediately becoming the robot slaves of a system that is interested in one thing only, money.
What do you think that conveys about the time and place of the writing and this format, the zine?
This is a medium for folks to give voice to whatever their opinions are. You know, it really allows this kind of not unfiltered, direct opinion about the state of the world. And in this case, he's describing what he thinks about the music industry. And I believe this is 1979, 1980, so a few decades ago.
There's something about a self-published thing where you don't have a gatekeeper that you need to please or whatever that allows him, in this case, to write with verve and some swagger.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of zines in this collection that are written by people who are often marginalized in our society, women of color, queer folks, disabled folks. This one here, Ring of Fire, actually is a local author. I'm trying to sort of highlight some of the local zines we have here. E.T. Russian, who still lives in Seattle, and they are actually really active in disability activism and also in the local arts community. But this zine, they wrote when they were 19 years old, And it was after they experienced a terrible accident train hopping, and they had to have both their legs amputated. And they started writing about this experience and what it meant to be a disabled young queer person who was also questioning ideas about gender, questioning ideas about sexuality. And this I think came out in like 1996 or 97. And it still feels really timely and relevant and just really fresh. Yeah, 1997.
So what's this one look like?
So this one on the cover, it's pink. It's smaller. It's
like the size of a quarter sheet of paper.
Yeah, it's a quarter sheet size zine.
Would you read a little smidge from that
too?
Sure.
Let me see what I can find. All right, how about disabled slut? Having sex as a disabled person is different than it was before I was disabled. I have to maneuver myself around differently. Because both my legs were amputated, it makes it harder to be smooth in bed. I have to always prop myself up on my knees because I have no feet. I would wear my prostheses, fake legs, in bed, but they're not so comfortable. Plus, the ankles on them don't bend, so my feet are always sticking up funny at a 90-degree angle. In other words, I have to plan out every move I make, which takes some of the spontaneity of sex and makes me embarrassed sometimes too. Sometimes I get self-conscious. That's another reason why having sex as a crip can be different. I'm more vulnerable.
So, I mean, maybe that doesn't sound that radical to somebody today who's used to social media and used to a bazillion different, you know, blogs and publications online. But to somebody in 1997, when that stuff was just in its infancy, this seems like it would be pretty unusual.
Right. I think you have to remember that, like, in 1997, there wasn't a whole community of blogs or Facebook or any of those things that people could search out. I mean, it was a really different landscape. And so, you know, they're just talking really honestly and candidly about what it means for them now to have sex. But I think trying to find that, I mean, going to the library to find something written like this, you wouldn't find it in the library at that time.
Yeah, that probably isn't not a Dewey Decimal subject.
Right.
Yeah. Last question. Have you, like, encountered your own zines as you've been going through the collection at any point? And if so, how did that feel?
I have. There was some cringing involved, but some of them were a little angst-ridden and...
Do you remember any specific subjects that you wrote about?
I wrote about body image, and I remember writing a rant about, like, teen magazines that I thought were promoting really unrealistic standards of beauty and size. So that is one thing I can recall directly from that zine. But I guess I would say there's a certain sense of pride that I did create this thing, and at some point it's going to be cataloged and it will be findable in this collection, and someone might find it and read it and say, oh, this is cool.